Hello, everybody. This is your host, Dr. May, and I'm in pain right now. I think I have only not too many non-emotional pain that's actually from my own silliness or a medical intervention. I got to the kitchen accident because I put excess fat in excess fat and splashed myself, and actually I have my hands in water, both of them, because I really singed them. I actually splashed some of my face too, so imagine I'm drenched, both hands in water. I have a cold compress in my forehead, but I'm talking to you. So I wish you all a good evening. Our topic today is that exactly, pain. Why I think how much the discussion has been on the bill that tries to say that babies do not feel pain and therefore they can be aborted before a certain time. I tell you that on day 5 of the embryology of human beings, the nervous system starts to form. And so at the first week of life, there actually has already the beginnings of the nervous system, which actually starts with sensibilities or feeling and awareness, essentially. So the baby who is in the womb is subjected to sensation, positive or negative. And imagine the helplessness of a child that is essentially all the milieu of defenselessness. And in the womb, it can be a very harboring and hospitable environment, and it can also turn very savage, such as that of a woman trying to abort her child. The child is essentially all feeling and sensation and all defenselessness. So the insult of whatever sharp force, blunt force, chemical force that will be inflicted on a child will be felt maximally by this small, precious creature. And so I imagine, I invite you to just put your hand over a flame. I did it to myself, but not advertently. But here I am experiencing great pain. How much more will a child in that state of helplessness, total helplessness, to be subjected to great and even lethal pain before the baby would have died? He or she would have had the greatest pain that an average person in this life would not have experienced. You know, Christ was the one who experienced the greatest pain in crucifixion that entailed the emotional and psychological pain, and also the beating, torture, the pain from the nails and the scourging, the crowning of thorns. He was really subjected all his nerve endings, and he is innocent and he is pure and he is God. He didn't have to do that such humiliating and such painful death from us, his creatures. But he did it for the very purpose of saving us. Now, he had given a lot of opportunity for every one of us to heal and live out the fullness of possibilities in His divine will here on earth by being in the Catholic faith, by obeying the precepts of the faith, by receiving the sacraments. These are ways to build the spiritual resources and make the physical and the earthly realm very easy. You know, Jesus said, my yoke is easy and my burden light. Christ has made life so we can live it abundantly. And by not conforming to His designs, we stand to screw it up big time. I know I had screwed up quite somehow big time because I didn't have to be in pain right now. If I had done my cooking in a quite transcendent manner, you know, good, true, and beautiful, if I did it properly with the right equipment, with the right even position, I was just like really winging it, poking a big scissors to transfer a chunk of big pork shoulder in oil. I'm asking for disaster, which I courted, obviously. But believe me, I will not do it again. So what I'm saying is that other saints have actually encouraged tinkering in your sin. Let's see, why don't you try putting your hand in an open flame for 15 minutes, and if you can still decide that you want to pursue your path in life in this sinful manner, well, then I can see that you want to just go for, you know, tolerating hell or accepting hellfire. This is how serious the proposition is. People can just go habit without thinking of the consequences because they are not churched. People abort for the same reason. They are not churched. And they were thinking that it's all okay. It's all for my upbuilding, my dreams, my bucket list. But ultimately, the reality will hit them. Because after they have accepted and acquiesced to the deed, consented essentially to the sin, they will realize how just awful their choice is. Whether it's from a direct consequence or from the feeling of guilt or just from the outcomes that had happened. You know, so many women experience post-abortive stress disorder. It manifests itself with bad behaviors that are maladaptive from the guilt and the depression and the rage that follows an abortion. They try to numb it. And they become even more promiscuous, even alcoholic, angry and risk-taking, and even drug-using. They now end up becoming very sickly, physically, emotionally, financially. It's becoming a downhill spiral for them. And that was just the consequence of them accepting or living the lie that abortion is okay. The way that one can get out of this is to simply just cry out, I have done wrong, my Lord. I have done wrong and I have sinned against you. I have killed my child. I want to change my ways. I want to apologize. I want to change my life. I want to tell others how wrong it is, how evil it is, how mistaken I was, how lost that culture is promoting abortion. This is the only way my friends who are post-abortive have healed. I who have been very pro-abortion and practically one of those, you know, post-abortive women, also because of my, you know, excessive zeal for it, have suffered because I basically defended that right instead of defending the right of others to live. I was mean, I was, you know, going for shock value in all the sort of modern ways of women bringing me happiness. In fact, it only just made my life more miserable, no matter what perks I encountered down the line. It was actually the simplicity and the humility that God in His church had led me to see is truly the way. So I encourage everybody that I know, especially those that are not in chaste situations, to pray, to go to the sacraments, to attend church, make use of their baptismal rite as Catholics to the fullness that they can, settle for nothing less. You know, if you are Catholic and you are baptized, you are entitled to a ceremony, a marriage ceremony in the church. So convalidate your wedding or go and be married in the church. Do not settle for fornication. Do not settle for living in. If you have to be in a situation where you are saving some money, you have to not, you know, do the marital act unless you are married. Stay chaste, much as it is very difficult with your living partner, until the marriage is officiated. And what I mean by marriage is that the husband and wife are witnessed and blessed by the church. If one does this civilly, approach a pastor so your marriage can be convalidated. This is the way that the sacrament can be truly lived in that marital vow. We already know that, you know, marriage is really between the husband and the wife. They are the ones who enact that vow. Yet the witness of the church, by having a priest witness it and bless the marriage, really gives an abundance of blessings that, as my friend had said, they really have felt they're finally married. The civil didn't really kind of count as much because it is not a sacrament. So what I'm saying is that people who think that, oh, it's great to get married in a beach or in a hotel or in a restaurant or a banquet hall, it is not the church. The right form must be observed, you know, for a true to have happened. It's really necessary, because if it's not the sacramental wedding, it will not really have that bond of, I know, special graces. My family had the experience of sort of severe marital struggle because of the situation where families don't really stay in one place, and maybe the husband works elsewhere while the wife stays with the kids in the Philippines for economic reasons. That's what had happened in my family. So it was such a great trial. And there was actually like unusual, like commandment breaking. But the marriage vows of my parents as a sacramentally wed couple made them endure that severe trial where other couples have broken apart. They have stayed through literally thick and thin. So now they're enjoying the outcome of their sacrifices and also their staying together, the commitment. it was really beyond them, because it was just something that is outside of their personality to stick it through, to affirm very patiently that the other person will be faithful and ultimately holy. But it was the grace of God that made them have a continuing marriage, but it's almost golden anniversary for my parents now. And they are like super great examples for me, because if not but for the grace of God that sort of was won or obtained through the sacramental wedding, they would not have endured, you know, years and years of separation and trial and mistresses and whatnot, the ugliness of it. But ultimately, they heard all that. And they're the happiest couple that I know. They're just enjoying their retirement together finally at one roof. And they're really praying daily. They're having multiple masses that are online. They can partake a lot of prayer group experiences together. They lift up each other in Divine Mercy and Rosary daily. They just celebrate, you know, the past and the present as well as the future, because they will go nowhere. They will, like, be together. They will, you know, really have grown and really affirmed the beauty of a marriage that continues beyond the honeymoon phase, beyond the trial phase, and now is in the mature phase. That is where we aspire to be mature in loving. And so I was counseling my young married friend recently by saying to them, you know, today is the feast day of St. John Paul. And what he wrote through a book called Love and Responsibility, which was very deftly summarized by Edward Siri, it basically said the meaning of love in a marriage is sacrifice. There is no other love or other meaning. It's actually to model by the couple Christ, who loved and gave his life for the church. And so we, couples who are in this sacrament, are not simply living it just for our own self, for selfish reasons, but we embody Christ, who is all giving and sacrificing for the church. The fact that couples exist and do this for each other, this is a sign of the beauty of God's love, which we are modeling by being in a faithful, fruitful, and forever relationship. So I thank you for listening, and I just ask you, for those who are in pain right now, offer your pain, offer your struggle, offer your sacrifice for the conversion of sinners, and for celebrating that Christ loved us and loved us till the end. And may we do so. And we pray for other people, not judging them, but affirming that they too can do good, as I and other people have done good and converted their hearts to the love of God and this divine will. May we all do so. God bless you.